Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Keith Overt here. And today I get to co-host, right? Which really means I don't get to talk, which is awesome. This is Top CEO and episode 3 with Sandra McGuire here from American Heritage Financial. And you got a whole cast of characters here. So I'm going to let you kind of ride into it and take it away.
Hey, we've got a great panel today. So thanks for being here, Keith. While each of our guests share the title of CEO, I think we're going to see that their careers and their companies are very different. I'm very excited to hear about their companies, their experiences, and maybe some advice that they have to share for aspiring entrepreneurs. So let's get right to it. And let's have all of them introduce themselves and their companies. And why don't we start with Jody? Ladies first.
All right. Well, my name is Jody Brown, and I have a company called Jody Brown CEO, but the acronym stands for Chef, Educator, and Organizer. And what I do is I am mostly geared towards connecting with chicks over 50 who are trying to transition to better health. And I help them do that by changing how they eat and how they think.
That sounds great. That's a very admirable, very admirable job. Now, how do you find your clients?
Well, right now I am working on developing content online. I have developed this particular iteration of my business to accommodate a lifestyle that I want. So I am gearing, I used to do a lot of one-on-one work. I have done everything from doing live cooking demonstrations to speaking in front of 150 people for lunch and learns at Gulf Power. I've done a broad spectrum of things, but I have decided that I want my lifestyle to be a little bit different. So I'm creating an online presence and creating content to draw people to me online so that I can help a broader range of people. Rather than just helping the people in the local area that I could drive my car to.
That's great. That's great. Michael.
Yes. Well, I'm Michael Myrie. I'm the CEO for the Florida SBDC Network, the Small Business Development Center Network, which happens to be headquartered right here in Pensacola out of the University of West Florida. We're one of the largest business development organizations in the state, and we're focused on helping our small and medium-sized businesses become world-class businesses. Do business globally and, really help them grow.
That sounds great. So how many businesses do you think you help each year?
Oh, each year we help anywhere between about 12,000 to 15,000 of the 2.3 million businesses that exist here in the state of Florida. So just a fraction of them, you know. We'd love to be able to help them all, but, capacity is what it is.
That sounds like a really big job.
And you guys just added an international piece too, didn't you?
We did, yeah. Helping businesses do business internationally, 95% of the world market exists outside of the United States.
Yeah.
And so it's important that we help our small and medium-sized businesses especially recognize that there's this whole world out there, a whole market that's available to them.
It's a lot to wrap your head around, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah. Very cool.
What are the qualifications for someone to come into the SBDC?
So we help businesses in all stages of the life cycle. So, you know, those early stage companies, what we call pre-venture individuals that are looking to investigate a new business idea, we help them. We traditionally provide them with training courses to help them sort of kind of build a foundation, do the feasibility of a particular idea. What we're best suited, and we target market focus on what we call small and medium-sized enterprises, businesses with about 5 to 50 employees, about 500,000 to about 50 million in sales. That tends to be our niche. We're not industry biased. And what I mean by that is we help all businesses regardless of, you know, retail, service, manufacturing. So all types of businesses.
Talk about resources, right?
Yeah.
Need some advice? Yeah. Call those guys.
Call those guys, definitely.
I'm a product of that, by the way. That's why I can say that. So.
Well, you were smart to go to them. Julian.
Yes, I'm Julian McQueen. I'm a founder CEO of Innisfree Hotels, and we're in the hotel business. We build hotels. We own hotels and we operate hotels. And I've been doing that for a long time. Started in Innisfree about 30 years ago, but started actually bussing tables when I was 15. So I don't know much more than hotel business.
But the real question is, Julian, is do you live in a hotel?
Oh, that's a funny question you ask right now.
Does it? Yeah?
Yeah, I feel like I do. You know, I'm there pretty much every day in some hotel. Starting with breakfast and
working your way through dinner and cocktails, right? Yeah, I got you.
So I'm always interested in hearing what the early days of a startup look like. Julian, what did that look like for you?
Ooh, in my case, the very first business I had was a hot air balloon business. So, try to go and get a loan for a hot air. I mean, it's...
you really don't get that every day, right?
It just goes on and on and on from there.
Most kids are like lemonade stand or, car wash. Julian's out of the gate with hot air balloons.
Hot air balloon business. That's so awesome. Aero's hot air balloon business. We gave training and did promotions in hot air balloons. I am an official professional aeronaut. If you need any training, I can train you to fly hot air balloons. And just try different things. I mean, I got into selling Chinese yo-yos. You know, those yo-yos that were... That are kind
I was
of,
actually
the,
really good at with those.
The wax yo-yos that you go like that. Mm-hmm. And I figured, I was at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and I figured if I got some very attractive young ladies to go out there and hawk these 10,000 yo-yos that I bought, I'd be a zillionaire. It just you couldn't comprehend. And I sold three. And that was the end of my Chinese yo-yo career.
Yeah.
So hot air balloons to Chinese yo-yos. And eventually, I went right back to hotels.
Yeah,
but seriously, on the first hotel I built was actually in Mobile, Alabama. It was an 82-room hotel, exterior corridor called Family Inns of America. It was ugly. Today, it is still ugly. It's got orange mansard roofs. Mm-hmm. Every other door is blue and yellow. So orange, blue, and yellow.
Awesome.
And I figured out a way to use someone else's financial statement, and I did all the work and got a piece of the action for doing it all. And just kind of, didn't know what I didn't know, right?
So right.
I threw myself into it, and I was hungry and figured it out. Lots of stories from there. I mean, I tell everybody when you have a bed every 12 feet and you serve alcohol, things happen.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. 23 later, right?
It's a match made in heaven.
I'd say you got a skill there, man.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, Jody, tell us what the beginning looked like for you.
That's a good question, because I've had multiple beginnings. I've
heard that happen sometimes.
It does.
And you start and then you have to go back and start again.
Well, I think that's part of the entrepreneurial disease, right? Is that you...
Squirrel. Squirrel.
Oh, my God. Look, a shiny object. I think that it's a matter of... I think many people get discouraged by starting a business because when they start a business, much like Julian just said, it doesn't end up being what you expect. So you figure you don't have the tools in the toolbox and you just throw the baby out with the bathwater. But for those of us who suffer from the disease of wanting to be our own bosses and to have a lot of excitement and entrepreneurial opportunities, you gotta lick your wounds and move on. And you have to, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got is the business person who succeeds is the one who detects and corrects and constantly detects and corrects and detects and corrects and detects and corrects, because it's not a straight shot. And if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right?
Exactly.
So that's to get back to the specific question, this iteration of who I am came out of starting and realizing that this didn't fit this, and I'm putting my hand up, we are on radio, but over here, number A did not end up being really what I wanted to do ultimately. But the only way I figured that out is I had to put my toe in the water and I had to make the mistakes and I had to keep detecting and correcting and fine-tuning what I wanted. So ultimately, I knew that a very large part of what I wanted at this stage of my life had to encompass two things. I needed to make a ton of money because I have not planned accordingly, full disclosure, but I don't believe that my life is over. So I knew I needed to have something to create a lot of money, quickly, and I knew I wanted to do it no matter where I was, whether I was sitting at a beach in Bali with a laptop or here in Pensacola with a laptop. So I basically reverse engineered what I wanted, took all of my life skills, which is a chef, as an educator, as an organizer, and created a little niche for myself to specifically speak to people. So it has taken me, it's been a surreptitious route, but the only reason I am where I am, and I'm not where I'm ultimately going to be, is because I keep nipping and tucking and keep trying and keep honing in and defining where I'm at. Because the one thing I have learned as a business person is if you're speaking to everybody, you are speaking to nobody. And taking the plunge from me going to say, oh, I can talk to anybody who wants to hear that what I have to say, right? It's health information. It's good for everybody. But it's not. Because you really need to be speaking to who you're talking to, and letting go of the potential to close doors to open other ones is a really hard thing for an entrepreneur to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard that before, haven't we, Keith?
That's in Mike's wheelhouse,
yeah,
is it not?
That's a story that's, I've heard that tens
is,
of thousands
That
of
is y'all's business plan for the business plans,
it
right?
It really is. And Jody's the ideal yeah. customer for the SBDC, mm-hmm. one that is, you know, constantly trying to fine-tune the business and continue to enhance what it is that you do. Man, that's a fantastic story. It's an inspiring story.
Okay. I'm now, not giving up.
Now, this is something that you do. Is you have classes at the SBDC to help people with their business plans. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we do a lot of training, a lot of workshops that are intended to enhance more or less ownership or management skill sets in operating their business to ensure that they understand how cash moves through the business, for example, how important it is to have it on hand, to ensure that they're working and fulfilling the responsibilities from a workforce perspective. So we do a lot of different topical areas. But our cornerstone service is really our one-on-one consulting that we do with our business owners. You know, and that's something that we offer at no charge. I'd never use the F word because there is a cost associated with delivering what it is that we do. And there's a return on investment that our funding organizations expect of us. But providing that one-on-one consulting is really where the rubber hits the road, the work that we do on an individual basis, helping that individual business owner recognize what's possible for them.
Or not.
And them access it. Or not.
Or not. Or which not. I had to say yesterday with Cheryl, one of the best things that happened to me was they were like, it's not going to work.
Absolutely. You know, I work a lot in the legislative congressional environment, and so I have to explain to our policymakers that it's just as important talking somebody out of not starting a business when they're not ready as it is to helping somebody actually grow their enterprise.
Yeah.
It is an economic savings to that, just that individual, but to all of the taxpayers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't waste everybody's time with that idea.
Yeah. So Julian, as a brand new CEO starting your own company, what was it that you weren't prepared for?
Well, I don't want to go too grand, but I guess the time, you know, the amount of time it took to get something done, it's always takes longer than you ever plan. And I was thinking about what you said about what an entrepreneur is, and I found a definition that I liked a lot. And an entrepreneur is somebody that is a quick learner. I mean, they learn from their mistakes and they rebound, and they're not necessarily the smartest person in the room, and
absolutely.
I can absolutely prove that. But it's I like the idea that an entrepreneur is a very special character that is willing to jump off the cliff and not really know where the bottom is, right? And I think in my case, I'm a classic ADD candidate. You know, I have shiny things that I go after even today, and mine are airplanes. I can't think when an airplane goes by, so that's my squirrel. And and I just think that that part of that process is that you don't really understand the real consequences of your actions when you start off. And it's almost like a blessing. You know, it's a blessing that you don't know what you don't know.
All right.
And that when you start off down this trip and you go and you buy yourself a hot air balloon and you go, you know, this should work. And then you find yourself, you know, with a debt payment, you know, you have to make it your hot air balloon
and
payment.
A whole bunch of hot air.
And, you have a balloon payment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, anyway,
what's the average balloon payment run, Julian?
Well, it depends on the balloon. So, you know, it's at the time it was a fortune.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's true in anything. I think in my particular case, I was fearless, I think, mm-hmm. and I didn't know what I didn't know. And I jumped out and I tried to make it work. And I think probably the character that probably serves me best is that I am tenacious, and I do come back. And when someone tells me no, it's like it motivates me. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, fine, that's a no. How do I find the yes? You know, how do I get there?
Awesome.
I'm going to jump in here real quick.
You jump in.
So, because I think you hit on something, whether it's being tenacious or not, whether it's entrepreneur or CEO or just leader in general, is you find yourself, I found myself like really capable of researching, right?
Yeah.
So it was, yeah. I don't have to know the answers, but I know I can find them somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was like the biggest thing going out, which is, you're fearless because I was like, the answer's there, I'll just have to go find it.
And oftentimes I think we think that a good leader has a lot of answers, but really it's all about finding the right question,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. If you can find the right question, the answer will follow.
Sure.
And you don't have to be the smartest guy, like I said. You just have to be able to ask, to find that right question that's going to be that little zinger that sends you over the hump.
Yeah, Julian really hit it on the head there. You know, the best best clients, best business owners we've seen that have had the most success are the ones that ask the right questions and are willing to accept answers or be coachable, you know. And you talk about research, you know, they know what they don't know, and they discovered along the way. But if they can surround themselves with good people, good resources, you know, that's the key to success.
And there's a huge network here in Pensacola to help them do that, by the way. Right. Not only with the SBDC and UWF, but just in the business movement that we see here and the community events that I know all of you are in. I could say I probably go most anywhere here in town and be able to ask somebody some form of business question and probably get a decent answer.
You bet. Mm-hmm. I mean, and people that are in the business or whatever business that you are in are very anxious to serve and to share their knowledge. And particularly, I think it's a Southern cultural thing. Maybe because I'm a little biased, you know, where people do want to share their knowledge and they don't want to, they're not looking for a fee. Is that the F word?
That is, well, free is the F word.
Oh, free. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Wow. He just dropped both F bombs.
Right, right.
So while we're talking about successes, Julian, what do you feel has been your greatest success as an entrepreneur?
I think the culture that we built. I mean, when we started Innisfree Hotels, my wife and I made a decision. This is, you know, I'm ancient. You know, I'm very, very old. And
back when hot air balloons were cheap, by the way, ladies.
That's right. Back when you could buy a hot air balloon for little to nothing. And I think the culture that we've created is what really is the strength of Innisfree Hotels. And when we started Innisfree, you know, we were very keen to start a company that actually blended the personal and the professional life, because we felt like it was really a formula for schizophrenia, not to be who you are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this notion that, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, in the post-war era, where you were a professional when you came to work, you didn't share your feelings, you didn't share at a personal level, and then you punch the clock and you go home, and then you are who you are. And to me, that was always just a formula for stress and for a very ultimately schizophrenic kind of lifestyle of way of being. So we made that conscious decision early on that when we started Innisfree, we would establish not only a platform for people to be real, and authentic is the current word, you know, but also give them the tools to do it with. So, you know, my degree's in psychology. I'm married to a psychotherapist. It takes a professional to be married to me. That's my...
Yeah.
That's my...
That's a fun dinner table, isn't it?
Yeah. Every night. So that's, you know, we think that way, right? And so we wanted to emulate that in the company. And what we did is we didn't come up with the principles. We asked everybody in the company just to come together and ask the question of what kind of place they would like to work in, right? And then, you know, you go through the typical visioning process, you know, so what are the obstacles and then how are we going to get there? And we wrote those principles down over 20 years ago, and they're still the same principles we use today. And every single person that works for Innisfree carries those principles around with them.
Julian, I thought I was the only person who worked for a company that did that and went through that exact same process. My favorite startup that I worked for, we did that, and we had principles that came from the ground up. The employees created them. And as the company grew, we thought, how are we going to get new employees to accept the principles that, you know, that the founding, you know, that, that the original employees created?
That's right.
So we had, you know, the original employees indoctrinate them, basically.
That's right.
And teach them. Even the mission statement for the company was created by employees.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't do it from the top down.
You
it
cannot.
Has to come from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that in place, then all of a sudden you create this organism that rejects anybody that's not in that same kind of state of mind.
Yep.
So it's self-policing after mm-hmm. a while. You know, I hire somebody, they hire someone else. You know, I hire the person that has that kind of mentality and that approach to life. They hire the next person. And as it continues, all of a sudden it's got a life of its own.
Yes.
And it's the moment someone steps in and tries to be, you know, something contrary to that, I don't have to fire them. They fire themselves. You know, they go somewhere else because they can't find like-minded people that are trying to sabotage or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is that they're up to in any given day.
You're right.
I'm impressed you picked the right values mm-hmm. that have stayed that long.
Because
a lot of companies, that's a hard thing to do for how many years? 20?
30 years.
30 years, and you haven't changed. And they're in his pocket, ladies and gentlemen. Now he is drinking his own Kool-Aid.
Of course they are.
Can I look at that?
That is very impressive,
thank
man.
Thank you, sir.
Every employee at Innisfree carries these around. And we used to give them $5 for every time they, you know, we asked
awesome.
Them to see if they had these principles.
That would so work with my kids.
Yeah.
Seriously,
and
right?
You know,
ding, 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 ding,
here's the rules. Here's the rules. Keep them in your pocket. Every time I ask you, if you got it, you get $5, right?
This is beautiful. I love it. I love it.
Can I jump in here for a quick second
yes.
and say something? Because I don't want to. I didn't know you were coming until 3 minutes before you came here. I got.
That's how we roll around
yeah,
here.
Yeah. but when I've been coming here to Pensacola for 20 years. I was sharing my time between New Orleans and here, and I finally decided, as I said, to pull my stick out of the mud and stick it in the sand.
Out of the bayou, right?
So I'm not unfamiliar with Pensacola, but I did not know who you were. So when I came here, I moved here about 15 months ago, and I got actively involved in the garden that you so generously got behind up near on Hain, and I don't even know what the name of it is.
It's from the ground up.
From the ground up. Sorry. Because I'm old and I don't remember everything. Anyway.
We can put it on the card.
Everybody can talk. Everybody, you know, your name was everywhere because everybody was talking about Second Online. I did a little research because I wanted to know who was behind what I was doing because
Gulp.
I'm very community minded.
Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing that I unfolded as I was doing some research is, A, there's not a lot of information about you out there personally, which is always good.
Hmm.
Only because if there's a lot out there, it's usually not good news. But the good thing that I discovered was that you had a great reputation for being able to maintain your employees, people who came to you, came and stayed and worked with you forever. And that stuff, that vibe was pervasive everywhere nice. I looked. And I think that speaks a lot to who you are as a human being, more so than you are as an employer, because I think a lot of people are hungry for work environments where they feel like they contribute. Mm-hmm. And clearly you've made something, this culture of cooperation that you've created under your umbrella has made not only a great impact on them, but it helps your business too. You're not turning over and retraining people and having, you know, all the headaches that go along with that. You delegate and you let people do their jobs. And it's the ideal business model for everyone, right?
It is really
to just
is, yeah.
make it work.
Well, I mean, what we discovered early on is that people will die for a principle, but they only work for a paycheck, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the loyalty and the principles that are behind what they're doing every day is paramount to creating a sustainable organization. And this whole idea of being authentic and having principles, you know, we talk about ourselves being a triple bottom line company. You know, we measure ourselves by how we treat the people, the planet, and profits come as a result. And it's true. People want to have principles, particularly the millennials. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to just come and draw a paycheck. They want to know that they're doing some good
in the
world.
Yeah, there's some value and some mm-hmm. purpose for them, yeah.
Right.
What do you find in the Small Business Development Center world? I mean, are all the problems the same problems across the board? Like, because I think that one right there is probably the in the top three for every person, whether you're a CEO or a manager, is the employee retention and the training and the culture building.
Absolutely. And within our strategic plan for our organization, we have six pillars, and they all are identified as a P. And the first pillar is people. Because really, it begins and ends with our workforce as far as we're concerned. And we find that the greatest innovations and ideas actually bubble up through the organization. So we foster a culture where we seek out our workforce to help us improve the organization. We committed 5 years ago to really adopt principles, Baldrige principles, to be a continuous improvement organization. To do that, you can't just do it in isolation of leadership. You know, it has to actually be more inclusive and actually not just internally, but externally to our key organizations, stakeholder organizations as well. So we constantly seek feedback and from our customers, from our stakeholders, from our workforce to try to drive new innovative ideas, to be responsive to what our customers are asking of us and what we anticipate what their future expectations and needs are.
Yeah. Are you finding any new trends that are coming around the corner? That Julian might need to add to the card?
Yeah, actually, absolutely. One exciting thing that we're working on right now, and we're really starting it here in Northwest Florida and then carrying it to the rest of our organization statewide, is staying ahead of the need as it relates to how cybersecurity and cyber threats affect small and medium-sized businesses.
Yeah.
And so we're really building up our skill set, working with our federal and state partners to address and create an awareness in the broader community. But what we find is the top needs of businesses here in the state of Florida, and they're not uncommon nationwide either. You know, I see it around the country. We always hear about access to capital, and that certainly is a big, big challenge, especially to earlier stage companies. Uh-huh. But to our target market focus, which are generally the established companies here, they really need intelligence more than anything else. There's a huge diversity among information and data and access to it.
That's the truth.
Between small and large business.
Yeah.
And so we try to mitigate that gap by bringing that intelligence, that big data to the table that helps then our small and medium-sized companies make the right business decisions. Because we know that they're only one bad decision away from being a going concern.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. Very true.
I would like to add quickly, too, if I may, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about this. But
you're on the radio. You can talk all day.
When I was a sophomore in high school, I had a teacher for my English class called Major American Authors, and he said something to me that really impressed really strongly on me at a young age. And he said, you spend half of your waking hours at your job, one third of your life you spend at your job. If you don't like your job, how can you possibly like your life? So I have worked really hard at trying to create a job that I like. And I think in feeding into what Julian does, we're seeing more, and I'm sure you're seeing more of this too, Mike, of like this authenticity that's trying to come into the work environment where there's a culture of cooperation is a little bit different. And I think people like you were the leaders in this way before it started becoming more popular now. I see it in a lot of the entrepreneur circles that I'm in, but we're seeing that your business model has worked and people are starting to emulate that. So thank you for putting your foot forward and giving us all something to follow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, one thing we're seeing a lot of from employers is a need to actually not hire employees, but hire entrepreneurs. And there's an upcoming conversation that's going to be taking place where Quint Studer and Dr. Cheryl Kirby from my office are going to come together in a co-presentation to talk about how to foster entrepreneurship within an organization. And that's so critical. It is so critical. And I think more and more employers are looking for that.
That's a mindset that's really important to have in the workplace today, even if you're not starting your own business.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a lot of the business paradigm has shifted as well, because there used to be people who had niche, they brought one niche portion to the business. Now you got to wear eight hats. Mm-hmm. You got to bring more than one skill set to a job now. And so entrepreneurs automatically do that by default, right?
They do, yeah.
So, there used to be one specialty of this. Now you just, you're flying by the seat of your pants and, I can organize that. I can do that. You go home, you Google what you need to do and you figure it out,
Right.
But the job descriptions have broadened for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think are some of the other issues that are facing small businesses today?
I think some of the biggest challenges that we've seen, and we hear, and we do a lot of research, trying to stay attuned to what are the big challenges, top needs of small and medium-sized businesses here in Florida. And obviously, workforce is a big challenge. The recruitment and retention of workforce for small businesses, given that they generally can't offer the same level of benefits that larger companies can offer. So how do you retain those employees? You know, a lot of them have to come up with creative ideas. You know, how do you integrate them into the business to make them a critical part of that? We even find that challenge ourselves from the Florida SBDC perspective. You know, we have a specialized focus, and Diane is, you know, sitting next to me, my assistant, is one of our millennials in our organization. How do we keep this talent for the next 25 years in our organization? How do we keep them from leaving, you know, and staying with us and making contributions in the long term? And so we're constantly trying to learn from our millennials and learn what their specific needs are, how they like to do business, and how we can foster that.
So what are you finding? Because I'm truly curious, because my, what's the generation after millennials called?
X.
My kid, other than my kids, right?
Right.
So because they're sharing a lot of the characteristics, right? And I'm trying to understand my children, to be honest, and how it applies to creativity and all that. But so what do you find for trends for millennials?
So I have three millennial children, so I'm still trying to figure them out myself, you know, 19 to 24, three of them. What they're really looking for more than anything in an employer, and this is what I'm getting from my own children, is they're looking for flexibility more than anything else. They're looking for opportunities to work the way they are best able to work. They're looking for employers. Ironically, my daughter told me the other day, her supervisor told her to put her phone down, you know, and she found that to be almost insulting, you know, as in the fact that this is how I communicate. And I'm not just engaging with people in a social environment, but rather this is how I'm transacting business internally. I'm texting the person down the hallway. That's just how they choose to communicate.
Sure.
You know? Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's funny you had mentioned that. You know, we're in the hotel business. Of course, you've got to be there.
Right.
You can't, you know, somebody's got to check you in, and somebody's got to be able to make the bed and serve the food. But we also have a digital media department, and they're all made up of 24 and less year olds. And I had to segregate them from everybody else because they like to wear.
Does not play well with others?
No, I mean, they play well, but they have different standards. Like they like to wear their pajamas to work, and that's okay. I mean, what's the big deal?
Right.
I know. I agree.
So, you know, if you everybody can do it, do it. I didn't want to wear my pajamas, and you know, other people, I don't want wearing their pajamas, but
give them what they need to get the job done.
That's
right?
What they needed, and so we put them over in this little building, and they have their whole world, and the flexibility and the flex hours and the remote working and that sort of thing is very much part of who they are.
Dude, you had me at pajamas, man.
So now everybody's happy.
But that's great. That's knowing what you need to do to get the job done, right?
Yeah. These are great, very brilliant, very smart young people.
The other thing we need to do, though, is making sure that the rest of our workforce, the other generations, understand and have sensitivity to that as well. And so we try to build that understanding in our older generation. Most of our workforce, most of our consultants tend to be on the backside of their careers, and this is a way in which they really give back to what it is that they've learned throughout their careers, throughout their lives. You know, and they sometimes get frustrated, you know, and so you find that, you know, there has to be a little segregation there. But
take their pajamas away.
Right.
Well, now this is a whole fascinating conversation, is the generations. And when you take into consideration all of the historical and cultural events that happened that shape each generation and why each generation is who they are, it just fascinates me. And then when you put them in the workplace and how they work, I could go on for hours talking about this. I love it.
So I'm going to back you up on that, though. So my kids have been here, and they were also been to the other studio previous to this where it was just myself. Here, there's lots of interaction, lots of other entrepreneurs. So things like Nerf guns and video games are no problem, right? And hang out and do whatever you do, and we get some other stuff done. They see a real collaborative environment. And actually, just the other day, I had to have that discussion. It was like, it wasn't like that for me entering the workforce, and really kind of get them to wrap their heads around some of these cultural shifts that have happened. Mm-hmm. The Facebooks, the social media, the cell phones, all of these things that were never there, that didn't facilitate the opportunity to really create and do whatever it is that you really love doing and probably make a decent amount of money with it because everybody has a need, and now we can all discover everybody's needs really quick, right?
Right.
So,
Now, you mentioned that collaboration part, and that, you know, I think that is probably one of the those moments, you know, when you're growing as an entrepreneur where you feel like you've got to do it all and you've got to have all the answers, that you finally kind of tip over to the fact that really the answer is in how you consult one another and how you put the idea in front of the ego, so that when everybody sits down and they start trying to solve for the problem, you have to recognize that the answer can come from anyone, you know, no matter what the socioeconomic background is or whatever the rank is in the organization. The idea is out there, you know, if you can keep the culture open to the fact that it can come from anywhere. So, I mean, I haven't made a decision by myself probably in 10 years. Because
that's probably a safe thing, because during the last one was a hot air balloon, man.
Then there was the hot air balloon.
Well, I often say I haven't innovated in the last 20.
Yeah. It really does take everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's really interesting because I recently read something on your website. I think it's on the blog about taking the emotion out of your decisions.
Yeah, tell us how you do that as a business owner, right?
I have a lot of emotion. There's a lot of emotion. But I think it's really more about the ownership, you know, than the emotion. I think the ownership of the idea. I mean, we don't talk about, you know, who owns the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at many examples in our Western civilization, it's very important in political, particularly in political circles, that you claim it's my idea, and it becomes such a possessive, you know, egocentric, you know, point of view that it doesn't allow for this opportunity to innovate and create and find that missing, you know, moment or that missing ingredient that's going to take you to the next level. As long as you're attached to it, it just devours creativity and innovation.
You're right. So here's another question. What does CEO mean to you?
That's a great question. To me, it's about building possibility where possibility hasn't been realized before. I think one of the greatest things that I enjoy in leadership and being a CEO is really helping individuals create possibility in their lives and in their careers. In a way that they hadn't seen before. And so I constantly challenge and make all of my employees get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
By being uncomfortable really helps them actually really expand themselves, which will then carry over to the organization and help expand that.
I have a friend, an artist here locally, Rafi Perez, who's done some of the paintings that I haven't gotten on the wall yet, but when he and I first met, he said the coolest thing. He took part of his life and said, everything that I'm afraid to do, I'm going to do first.
Mm-hmm.
And had some fantastic, like, just experiences because he just chose to jump in, right? And this is a fantastic artist and all of that, but took that same spirit of, let's just go solve the problem and figure it out and hit it head on and go for it.
Right.
It backs that up.
It reminds me of Woody Allen saying, you know, that 90% of success is showing up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, just, you know, what you're saying, Michael, about, you know, just putting yourself out there, I think is very, very important. As far as a CEO, when I think about what I do, you know, what I try to do is I try to walk my talk. I try to, by example, show that, you know, I'll do whatever job is out there. And when people see you doing that, they realize that, you know, it's not about your title. It's about, you know, doing what has to be done, whether it's picking up trash around the hotel or whether it's, you know, finding a kid that's lost in the hotel and finding their mother and stopping the world and knowing that that's the most important thing you could be doing right now. I think that example is critical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do a lot of rolling up our sleeves in our office and our team. And if somebody needs help, you know, no job is underneath anybody.
Yeah, totally absolutely. Agree. I agree with you 100%. I've been in the service industry for many years. And a few weeks ago, I was at a restaurant where I do some work. And I was in the kitchen cleaning the drain out under the sink where all the caca goes because people needed to see me do it.
I am also a product of the service and culinary industry.
Do what you should never do anything.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say.
Don't ask anybody to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself.
I couldn't. It felt weird to ask somebody to mop a floor or clean out a bathroom or those just things that sometimes you just don't want to admit that you have to do, but they have to be done.
Just got to do it.
Well, my title is not CEO, but my mantra is you just do what has to be done.
I'd say that works.
Yeah. Yep.
I gotta, let's talk about you though, because you took it and twisted it and totally changed it from what the typical chief executive officer or, you know, how it gets phrased, but and turned it into really what you did.
Yeah, I'm a little odd. Always have been.
That's okay. The world needs
part of
odd
my
people.
Entrepreneurial charm. I'm still vacillating a tad with putting the nail in the coffin as far as claiming my position. I will admit that, getting closer and closer. But I wanted to be able to, because I had such, I've been in the networking world and I've done a lot of stuff, and you got to have your elevator speech and your tagline. I mean, I understand all that stuff, but I wanted people to look at my business and sort of get a clear understanding quickly of what I did, because I'm a sort of enigma. So being able to say chef, educator, and organizer was three quick statements to me that meant, okay, well, it's going to give me a little bit of an understanding of who she is and what she does. It makes me want to ask a few more questions, but it was, instead of just saying Jody Brown, well, who are you and what the hell do you do? You know what I mean? It gave people an opportunity to get a little glimpse at what I was and who I am. So that's why I use that as a tool of recognition, but also as a, like, I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
As CEO.
Yeah. Very cool.
So what are some of the personal sacrifices that you've had to make as you build your own business?
Friends, family, children. No, I'm just kidding.
Marriage.
I think
which are all stories at some point for some people. I mean, you really do. Unless you define it in the beginning, you lose some stuff.
I totally agree. And so here's the thing for me that makes it a bit easier than me. You have kids. I know he's married. I, by choice, have never gotten married and never had any children. So it eliminates a lot of the friction that other people struggle with. So I answer to myself.
Which also means she has nobody else to blame.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but those are choices that I made early on, and I'm good with that. But I will say that, because there is no bank of dad and there is no other financial help anywhere, that I'm always pushing. So I'm frequently having to say no when money's tight and things aren't happening the way I want to. I have to say no to a lot of fun. So I don't have as much fun in my life as I used to have, because I'm sitting at midnight. The other night I was sitting at midnight making sure that my blog post that's scheduled to go out tomorrow morning is done, because I knew for 5 days I wasn't going to have time to do that stuff. So I'm eliminating myself from a lot of things that I would typically have been enjoying. I do love what I do, which makes it easier to sit on the sofa at midnight in my underwear and do what I'm doing. But I still am missing out on some fun stuff.
Right. So, Michael, what do you think? Entrepreneurs are prepared for that? Are prepared for personal sacrifices?
No, I think it's probably the biggest shock that most people think. I want to start my business because I'm tired of working for somebody else, and I want to travel all the time.
I'm going to give up 40 for 80.
I want to
golf.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of them are shell shocked that they really have to make life sacrifices and lifestyle sacrifices to really create their dream. I think it's huge. For myself, it's I just don't sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm an obsessive insomniac. Drives my wife nuts.
There's
a
piece of consciousness that comes along with that, though, that facilitates you to get some things done. So, as an entrepreneur, I'm fully aware of what happens at lack of sleep. So.
Yeah, I spend more time in Hilton hotels. I'm a Diamond member for 6 years running. And it's a sad thing, because it means I'm away from home.
Go get a drink, dude.
At least 100 nights a year.
Yeah.
But when people ask me, so what are your hobbies? I'm usually at a loss to say I work, but I enjoy it. I'm a classic builder. I'm not happy unless I'm creating and growing something. you know, and it it just becomes obsessive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first got the opportunity to have ownership in a hotel, and I saw the moment. And
you saw the monocle and the top hat, didn't you? You did, didn't you?
I see. Monopoly's my favorite game.
I see it, man. I see it.
Anyway, I told my wife I would be seeing her one day a week, and for 5 years, I almost did not make that commitment. I was hitting one day a week, not every week. And so it made me come back around to your question in that one of the, probably the most important financial decision, the most important decision that you can make as a CEO, as an entrepreneur that's going to strike out and make your way in the world is finding the right mate.
Absolutely.
Somebody that shares your vision, right?
Right.
Because they'll either be encouraging you or holding you back. And thank God I found the right mate, and she watched me lose the house, you know, after the first, the lobster business, I started importing lobsters from Maine. I figured that's a great idea,
right? Hey, look, live life on the edge, man, right? You're here.
So that to me is probably, when you start looking at, you know, life plans, you know, don't overlook that part, because that, you know, that is what's made me who I am today is my wife. She's my moral compass. You know, she's been there through the good and the bad times, and there's been plenty of bad times to get to the good times. So,
I want to add to that too, because something that has happened lately this is my second round of being an entrepreneur. I sold one and stopped and went back to work for the place that reminded me why I wasn't working there in the first place. Right. And so, not only do you're right, you've got the right mate or the right partner, but when you do something this time that I really, really love and really, really like, it's not work. Right. And so it's very easy to justify giving up some things that are important, family life, time, kids, all those things that happen, because while I'm not working, I'm having fun, right? So a 1 hour at the laptop can be 4 hours at the laptop, and it feels like one, right? But you're creating, you're making your stuff, you're happy where you are. So you and Julian, you and your wife not only were a good compatible match, but you guys chose to have a conversation that a lot of business owners don't realize they need to have. And this time around, I was smart enough, and actually some of the stuff from the SBDC, that to some things that you knew you had to have conversation-wise, some boundaries were set, some hardcore deadline boundaries that were like, regardless of what's going on, you still got to leave work at work sometimes. And mm-hmm. and like this is here, this is always, and that's not an option to be chosen as a variable, I guess, to say, because man, when you're an entrepreneur or a CEO, or you know, you're intense and you're in the stuff, and sometimes it's fun and you lose track of time. So I've got Nerf balls all over this office that show you how easy that is to do. So to add to it, you gotta be able to have that. You gotta know that you need to have that conversation, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and you have to make commitments to that. I will say that prior to coming to this community in January of 2011, in my previous position, I worked 7 days a week, essentially almost 24 hours a day for the former governor in Minnesota. And
so what happens when you live in cold snow?
Yeah. Well, you got to keep moving in order to
Stay warm, yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah. when I came here to this community, I really made a lifestyle change to commit myself to not working on Saturdays. And I've stuck to that. And it has made a huge difference, both in my productivity as well, to being a better leader, you know, because I was more well-rested. But it also made for a happier life because of a happier wife.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Julian goes home twice a week and feels like he's on vacation, right? instead of being in the hotels all the time.
Well, what I was thinking is that my week begins on Friday.
Yeah.
So, you know, Saturday's the, you know, that's when you're working the hardest, and then everybody's checking out on Sunday, and then you try to look for that midweek time where you can take a little time for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So one of our favorite questions to ask is, what do you think was your biggest mistake?
Bueller. Bueller.
Well, I bought a hotel in downtown Birmingham that...
The Redmont.
We never say that word.
Hey, I did my research.
about this beautiful, I mean, I'm from Birmingham, so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great to be part of this urban revitalization and buy this, it was the oldest hotel in Alabama, and it was beautiful, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Ralph Sampson bought it, and they put, you know, $20 million in it, and then they took them 6 months to go bankrupt.
Oh, only six?
6 months to go bankrupt, and then I said, this guy, the salesman came to me and broker and said, you know, do you want to buy this great hotel in downtown Birmingham and be part of the rebirth of downtown Birmingham? And I paid $1 million for a $20 million hotel and thought I was a genius. And Lord God, you know, I keep the picture of the hotel over my desk now to show me, you know, everything that shines is not gold. It just wore me out. 7 years, I went backwards, and it probably cost me 2 or 3 years of my life, you know, as far as progressing forward. We were just, everything that we made went straight into that hotel. It was beautiful, but
sure, you spent one to lose five, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Redmont's my big hotel failure.
So what did you learn from that?
Don't buy the Redmont Hotel.
You know, I think I learned that, number one, you don't fall in love with real estate, which I've heard my whole life, but now I know it, and, you know, down to my core. I love old hotels, so when I see an old hotel that's got lots of, you know, filigree and history, I back away from the table. You know, I really ask myself if I'm doing it for the right reason. So the emotions that are behind, I think, particularly hotels and restaurants, they're very ego-centric. I mean, once a celebrity makes a pile of money, they go and get in the restaurant business.
They sure do.
You know? Or they go buy a hotel.
It's crazy.
And it's just a horrible, you know, thing, because I think it's so much a part of who you are every day. You know, to be hospitable is something that you do intuitively. Mm-hmm. And if you could do that with your friends and your family, and, you know, you kind of get this image that, you know, I'll be living the right life or whatever. And in this case, I think my lesson was just be careful about and use the same principles that got you to where you were. You know, do the analysis, do the due diligence, you know, look at it objectively, and just try to keep your ego out of it. And I think it takes a big failure in order to understand that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's sure. important to have a failure so that you can know that everything, you know, just because you are successful doesn't mean you're always going to be successful.
That's right.
All right. My biggest failure in my career, I actually spent 4 years working for former Governor Jesse Ventura in Minnesota.
Oh,
I was wondering if that's what the governor.
So, it wasn't that governor. It was the next governor that I actually worked for closely, which was Tim Pawlenty. But in any case, it was extremely frustrating. And I found, and I guess learning lesson I got there is that if I ever want to be governor, surround myself with much smarter people than he did. But my learning lesson in my career here is I was so hungry when I came to this position in this organization, and I could see all the possibilities that existed, that in my first year, I was so hungry to grow it and realize them that I didn't slow enough down to listen to the people that had been around for a long time. And I regretted that. Eventually I did. I took the time to get that feedback and recognize some of the frustrations that people were feeling because of the speed in which I was moving. Mm-hmm. And so I had to slow down a little bit. Actually, at one point I actually heard, whoa, whoa, Yankee, you're in the South now.
It's island time, man. Spent the younger part of my life in St. Louis and then moved down here as a child, but then left and did some other things around the country, and you come back to here, and it's a different way of doing business. Now, of course, I wouldn't trade it for the world now, right? But it's different paces for different places, obviously. But there's that island time mentality sometimes.
Absolutely.
That drives people nuts.
I went through that. I went through that when I came back. I moved back here from Chicago. It's been 6 years now, and I was standing around like, come on, people, move it. Come right. on, day's wasting. And it probably took me a good 2 years to slow down.
You smile a lot more now, though, don't you?
I do.
See?
I do. Guilty.
Yeah, I had a lot of employees that found me to be distant and unapproachable because of the speed in which I was moving at. So mm-hmm. I had to come and recognize, and it was actually one of those employees that had the ability to actually come to me and share with me in an authentic kind of way. you have to recognize what's going on here. And that really helped. Really helped.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing to do to somebody that's, you know, considered above you or you know, the bad guy on the team. You know what I mean? Like, no, you go tell me. No, you go tell me. No, you know, I mean, I get it, but, and how many years ago was this?
This was 5 years ago.
Okay. So, yeah. You know, and there's sort of been a shift in some company culture lately that facilitates that. You always heard the, door open policy, right? But not everybody lived up to that. And you knew it wasn't going to be accepted or even agreed with. So,
right. Yep.
My biggest mistake, not necessarily a massive business one, but it feeds into something that you spoke about earlier. When I was in my mid-20s, I started exploring more of my personal power and understanding sort of where it was coming from, because I'm not a book learned person. I had a lot of life skills. Like, there's not, you know, it's nothing I can't do, but I didn't come the traditional route. So I was really struggling with sort of understanding where my power was and using it appropriately. Well, I took a course one weekend to sort of tap into some of my own personal power, and I saw it and got scared by it. And I am just coming back to it in the last couple of years. So I wasted 25 years of my life.
Yikes.
Not stepping into what I knew I had 25 years ago, but was afraid because of a variety of different things to stepping into it. But it's never too late to start again.
Well done. What was yours, Sandra?
Oh, gosh, I knew it. I knew you. I just knew you were.
Well, you know, I just figured it's fair. We're going to ask them. We got to ask you.
My biggest mistake?
Wow, do you have a lot to choose from? Or?
I do, actually. I have a lot to choose from. I'm not really sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, nothing really catastrophic, I guess. I think my biggest career mistake was probably not taking advantage of some of the resources I had available to me at one of the companies that I worked for in Chicago, and that set me behind considerably in my career development.
Yeah.
And I honestly regret that. I think about that often.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so you want to know mine?
Yes.
Since you know, we're just fair. Shredding it all out here. So mine, I think, which this answer has changed since the last time I was asked this question a couple of years ago. I think one of the biggest mistake was a couple of things, but it all folds into one. One, not being honest with myself. Right? Because sometimes you just don't want to fail. You want to gung-ho. You want to kick butt. But also not taking the time to figure out what that self was that I needed to be honest with, right? There's a lot of things that I did that I loved, and there's a lot of failures I had as a leader or as a teammate or as a chef or a cook or a dishwasher or the part of the cog in the machine. But there were some opportunities, and there were some things that probably could have been held better, and there was some self-sabotaging that would happen because I wasn't being honest with myself that, you know what, I jumped in gung-ho thinking this was going to be something completely different, and now I've wasted time and money, and you know, so you get that sort of fear of failure as opposed to just owning the failure and saying, all right, what's next? Yeah. You know, is was very huge.
Yeah, well said.
Detect and correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now you got to end. You have to end on happy, though. You got time. We can't end on all that sad.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Once you recognize that you made a mistake, that you missed an opportunity, you own it, you feel much better about yourself, and you can go on and feel good about that. You know, that you recognized it and pick up the pieces and go on and feel good about that.
Well, it's much easier to know you're not going to get blindsided, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you guys have been great today. Really?
Good conversation.
This has been a really good conversation. So, Jody, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, where do they find you?
I can be found across the board on pretty much any social network at Jody Brown, J-O-D-I, Brown like the color, CEO.
Great. How does somebody find the SBDC?
The best way to find us is just go right to our website. It's our gateway to everything else that we do at floridasbdc.org.
Okay.
And industryhotels.com is our website, and you can find out way too much about
Is there a picture of the balloon on there?
No, maybe.
You have one?
I'll show it to
you.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
I would love to see it. I really would.
No, I haven't talked about the balloon in a long time.
Well, I guess what? It's going to be subject to a conversation for the next 2 weeks now that I have just honed in on it all day today.
Yes. And wait, what did you call the pilot of the balloon?
An aeronaut.
Aeronaut. I didn't know that was a thing.
That's a thing. Apparently. You have astronauts and you have aeronauts.
Better than being a juggernaut.
Very true. Do any of y'all have any organizations or community events or even events with the businesses coming up? I know we have the Intrapreneurship August 4th, right? At 10. I don't have it in front of me. So 9 to 10:30. Oh, wait. Jody has it in front of her, which they can still register online. This is your job, by the way, man.
Yes.
At studery.org/training-development-upcoming-events. And so because we just talked with Cheryl yesterday about that, which will be pretty cool. And actually, we'll probably hone in on a lot of things that we've talked about today. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to the event.
Yeah. So, we'd like to give you guys the opportunity, if you've got some community events or organizations that you all support or have any needs for, by all means, give your shout out.
Well, the SBDC does a lot in ways of workshops and other area business events, and you can find that information through our website, again, floridasbdc.org.
And a lot are free.
Yes.
I said it. Yep. I said
it. Oh, you said the F word.
Yes, I did.
We're going
to
bleep that.
Free to the end user, there's a cost associated, yes. But honestly, some really good education that you could use, whether or not you own a business or you want to own a business or you're just – like the social media piece I did with Kelly at the chamber. I just wanted to know how to work Facebook, or Snapchat without having my kids to have to show me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I might want to rent your kids.
I'm telling you, they don't know Facebook because we don't let them do that one, but the Instagram they dominate on. And here we got asked to do, we do I-10 Wired, and help support that platform. We actually got asked to do Snapchat to help manage that for them. And I really had to go home and ask my kids how it worked.
Not a bad weird. Thing. Like felt I said, weird. I might need to rent your kids.
Yeah.
We're doing a promotion on September the 9th. It's a lip sync battle to raise funds for the Dixon School for the Arts. This is a school that we adopted on the west side of town. And we're going to have a lot of fun raising money for Dixon School of the Arts on September the 9th. You can go to our website and you can at industryhotels.com and see what we're doing there and join up, challenge the next team to the biggest, baddest guitar. Yeah.
Or just go dig in the dirt at the garden, man.
Yeah. And always, from the ground up, the garden, we've got, it's right next to the police station, just to the south of the police station. We're down now for a couple of months, but starting in September, we're coming back up, and we'll need lots of volunteers there. And you can literally, work for food and get all the food you want with a beautiful organic garden out there.
And then learn how to keep stuff alive, too.
Yeah.
I'm the worst. Yeah, plants don't live so long in my house.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I should volunteer and learn.
It's there a great, the, I was one of the, I was telling Julian when he arrived, I was one of the early contributors to the garden, and it's a great, it's just good stuff.
There's something that happens when you just play in the dirt, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I went down there before we put a fence around it. I was down there at 6 o'clock in the morning. Some mornings I'd wake up and I'm like, I just need to pull some weeds.
Therapy, right?
It is. It's like therapy. I remember years ago, I had a garden many, many years ago when I was living up in Boston. And there was this woman who was over the fence for me. And she said, she leaned over one day. I was like cursing down there.
And she goes, the best thing about plants is they don't talk
back. That's it.
That's great. Well, thank you all very much for coming here today. This was great. I appreciate it.
Thanks
I appreciate
for having
your
us.
Time. Thank you.
Appreciate the invite. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And
absolutely.
Nice to meet everybody. Thank
so you. If anybody's interested, this will be, of course you're interested, but this will be reposted on pensacola.businessradiox.com. Sandra, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, where do we send them?
You can call me on my cell phone at area code 312-804-5686. And you can find me at American Heritage Financial. And, we're located in Cantonment. You can email me at Sandra McGuire at ahfplanners.com.
All right, you guys, thanks for coming in today and being part of Top CEO. And this has been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters. Mm-hmm.